The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, the agent
friends.
For
Welcome
Truth.
Welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show.
Happy Saturday morning to you. It's Saturday morning,
Truth.
July
Joe
21st,
Bannister,
2012.
Happy Saturday morning to you.
We decided to do a little
Freedom Above Fortune
switch up
radio
here and
show.
Actually have a call-in show.
Talk 104.3
and, but as always, I like to start
well,
the show by saying
internet,
Jesus instructed us in Matthew
Works
chapter
radio
6.
Network.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be
thy
name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen.
And click on the Join Donate button in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage. Given the many blessings God has bestowed on
us, yes, I hear that.
I dedicate every show to our
I'm getting a little technical.
So I always start the show by praying as Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter.
A little bit of technical difficulties we're having here. I've got a little feedback in my ear, so I'm going to try to not pay attention to that and keep on plugging away here.
As it is in heaven.
As we all know, our country is in deep trouble.
As we forgive our debtors. And lead us
down. And so we need to work hard to try to save our country. Let's redouble our efforts to obey God's commandment and ask for every blessing that He might give to our country.
Let's redouble our efforts to obey His commandments, especially.
Well, we have a call-in show, and we supposedly have quite a few callers, so I want
to
jump right into that, if possible.
Joe, I don't know if you know, but we are hearing an echo from you before we get to our callers, and everything that's going out from here is somehow going through your system and coming back to us, so I'm hoping that you can fix that somehow.
Email list there at agentfortruth.com.
Well, apparently we're having some kind of difficulties with feedback and duplication. I don't know why that is.
Division. I no longer work for the IRS because during the last 2 years of my service there,
Joe, I'm going to suggest that you call our show on the live telephone right now. Just hang up on the Skype and call live, and we'll see how that works. Would you be able to do that?
Just cover me until then, James?
After gathering and analyzing a great deal of documents and evidence, I concluded that these claims about the federal income tax system were largely true. And when I asked my IRS supervisors to discuss my conclusions with me, they not only refused to have any discussions with me, but they also encouraged
me
to
We will be trying to get a hold of Joe right now, so hang on one second.
My IRS career came to an end rather abruptly in 1999 when I did, in fact, resign from the Internal Revenue Service, and I've been speaking about my experiences and conclusions regarding the federal income tax and other constitutional liberty-related matters ever since. I'm featured in a film called America, Freedom to Fascism. The film takes a provocative look at the Federal Reserve and federal income tax systems, and I highly recommend that you watch the film as soon as possible. If you've already watched the film, be sure to recommend it to others. You can type in the words America, Freedom to Fascism into any search engine and watch the movie for free, or you can order copies at freedomtofascism.com. And fascism is F-A-S-C-I-S-M, freedomtofascism.com. My guest for today's show is attorney Larry Beecraft. He's an Alabama attorney with decades of experience, and Larry's been on the show from time to time. I always appreciate his commentary and just assistance with grappling with all these interesting, strange issues about the federal income tax. Larry, thank you very much, and welcome back to the show.
It's my pleasure, Joe. How are things out west?
Oh, pretty good. Weather's been kind of warm in Nevada. Haven't got that first big chill yet, so we're kind of bracing and gearing up for it. How
about back there?
Oh, well, it's fall is definitely here. You know, it got down into the high 30s last night, and soon it'll be time to start having fires in the old fireplace.
That's good. I hear that over in Tom Cryer's neck of the woods, I think it's pawn shops are forbidden by state law to transact in cash. Have you heard about that?
I've seen some stuff on the internet. That sounds like it's going to be a little bit unconstitutional. You know, they're saying.
The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I think you may have been hearing my voice twice. Turns out we might have had a pre-recorded show running at the same time I was trying to do live. So I was competing with myself, not the IRS, believe it or not, for a voice on the radio. So we have a call-in show today, and had my introduction. You might have heard it twice, once from weeks ago and once from today. Anyway, we have callers, apparently, and so love to go to a caller right away and just get right down to business. Of course, I've called in myself. I'm not quite sure how that might work. Okay, so do we have a caller that's called in today? Hello, anyone there?
I'm here. This is Tom.
Okay, Tom. We're flying by the seat of our pants here. But let's go ahead. We've got you on the line. You're on the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. I'd just like to let other listeners know, apparently there was a misunderstanding that you can call in at that call-in number and then just listen to the show. Until we get some more donations, we can't really afford to have all the lines that would accommodate that or the technology. So feel free to donate so that we can get that technology. But in the meantime, only call in to the call-in number 410-848-9191 if you have a question. If you're just sitting there listening to the show, we appreciate you being here, but please only for people that actually have a question that wants to be put out on the air. So sorry about that little housekeeping item, Tom. What is your question that we can try to answer today?
Yeah, not a problem. I appreciate you taking these calls. That's really great. My question is, as a controller, as an accounting manager, who understands these, who understands his constitutional rights and the laws regarding the IRS, how do I go into a new position, a position that's paying, you know, $70,000-$80,000 with a $20 million a year company? How do I educate somebody regarding my position on the income tax?
I can't think of a more excellent question. In fact, I've dealt with that, you know, with many different people and myself, and I did actually do a lot of, you know, prayer and meditation about it. Without presuming whether you've already tried to enlighten people in a position like that or before, or whether this is something that you have an opportunity, and whether you're thinking, well, how, you know, should I keep my mouth shut or should I, you know, speak up? In my experience, it's really difficult to live in both worlds, shall we say. The biggest problem I see is that we're experiencing the results of decades of propaganda and you know, conditioning of the American public to believe that, you know, the IRS does things legitimately. I mean, everybody, you know, hates the IRS and everybody knows they make mistakes. But to actually just cold turkey tell someone, hey, you know, the income tax is really administering and enforcing this tax, you know, beyond its authority. Most Americans don't even have income. You know, let me tell you about the definition of income. You don't have to actually be liable for a tax before you're required to pay it.
you know, in, even in my experience, and, you know, I don't go around with a former special agent shirt on my back. When I deal with people, even though I have a relatively good sense of what's going on and how to explain it to people, they just, their eyes glaze over, and they just, there's so many steps that they would have to take to even really understand what you're talking about. The other problem is that most businesses are vulnerable, okay, to taking a stance, even if they listen to you, and even if they said, wow, you know, you're really making a lot of sense, then that puts the monkey on their back, and then they have to decide, okay, well, how am I going to handle payroll, and how am I going to handle filing the corporate return, how are we going to handle these bonuses, and on and on and on. And given that you, you know, you're a controller, accounting manager, and I was actually a controller just prior to going into the IRS, so I can really empathize with your position. What are your desires and thoughts that you might share with the listeners about, you know, what you'd like to do versus what you hesitate to do?
Well, I've had discussions with my boss here. This is the first time I've really had a discussion with him. And, you know, he's willing just to terminate me. He doesn't care because the liability is on him. For some reason, he believes, and he's spoken to HR people in other areas who have given him advice to withhold FICA when I have no W-4 signed on file. I've never signed a W-4 for this company. And with the last company, I was very fortunate not to sign a W-4. And I was terminated with the previous company because of the tax issue, which I have unable to prove, but I know that was a situation because a summons was issued to the employer, and there is a lot of stuff happening. But right now, I have a determination letter to the IRS. I'm making a determination letter to the Social Security Commissioner as documentation to prove to this employer, or to my job provider, I should say, that, you know, I'm not required. You're not required to withhold. I've written a letter to the HR person who had given him advice, and I'm waiting to hear a response back from them before I take any further action. This is a very challenging thing for me because I have the potential to make a lot of money in my career, and I feel limited in that because I know I'm not the only person in this position.
Right. Well, it's you know, actually, again, to reinforce how much I can empathize, when I left the IRS, you know, I left cold turkey and had a family to provide for and had to go find some work. So what I did is a public accounting job, you know, in a public accounting firm that I worked at prior to the IRS, I went back to them and they said, sure, we'd love to have you back, you know, because now you have 5 years of IRS experience. And I had, because they knew me and I had already worked there years earlier, I just jumped right in and started working. And then it was a couple, 3 days later when I got the paperwork, you know, that everyone gets when they get a job, including the W-4 form. And I looked at that form and then I told them, you know, I can't sign this. I mean, I'm not required to, you know, the whole thing because of what I had just discovered and you know, quit the IRS over. And they said, well, Joe, I thought you had left all that stuff behind you. And I'm thinking, well, I just left there a week ago, and this stuff, you know, it's all true, and I'm certainly going to live by what I know to be true. And they just said, look, here at the CPA firm, that's not going to cut it. And, you know, I said, look, okay, I'll leave. And so I just left. And of course, I was devastated because, again, had the wife and kids, you know, needing food and shelter and not having a job, leaving the IRS and then going there and only lasting about 4 or 5 days and being told by the partner, you're not welcome here. So I had to, once again, just place my trust in God and begin to work on a contract basis, working for myself. And I found that if there's any prayer of financial survival, you basically have to, you know, when you're in that arena where the people just don't understand and don't want to understand and they don't want the monkey on their back where they have to decide and make some tough decisions that you're already making,
You have to kind of live in both worlds. When you're in the world of the uninformed or unmotivated about these issues, you have to kind of, you know, go along with them, and you can't swim against the tide. If you're going to branch out and do something on your own, you'll be able to exercise more control. But all I can tell you, having done this for about 12 years now, is that it's very gut-wrenching and very difficult to live by your principles and live by the truth when most other people aren't interested in those concepts and you know, carrying the heavy load that it takes you know, in this environment where the whole public, a lot of us, myself included, have been dumbed down as far as the Constitution and the tax laws, and of course they're incredibly complex, I believe, on purpose. And it's just it's a tough battle, Tom. And so, you know, the only answer I have for you is that I've been there, I've done that, I'm doing that, and it's a daily battle. And I think it's difficult more for people like yourself or me, who really know the truth and can explain it, and then we're actually in the business, you know, we're in the discipline of accounting and tax issues, and so we, of all people, would have more credibility, but yet we also deal with others who are very fearful about learning the truth or acting upon it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm there with you, brother. It's...
Joe, if I could just jump in here.
Yeah, Jane, please do.
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, I know of a number of people that basically don't... One of the ways they get around that is they say to their employer, I'm just not going to fill out any paperwork. You make your decisions, and this is a hard thing to come to. It's sort of like an acknowledgement that I'm going to be stolen from, you know? I'm going to work here, but I'm going to be stolen from because I know the truth, but these people, they don't want to know the truth. And so you just say to them, I'm not going to fill out any paperwork, and please, you go ahead, and you just withhold from me what you think is necessary to withhold from me and what you think you must do under the law. And you go ahead and do that.
I think that's a good point, Jane, and I think it would help even the rest of the listeners to understand that, you know, there's a lot of different decisions that have to be made if you're going to make them at all. If you're not going to file a tax return, or you're going to have withholding upon your paycheck and yet still not file a tax return, one of the things to keep in mind, just from an economic sense, is that if you don't file a tax return and the IRS is getting information about what you're being paid, which is in, you know, the case of somebody that's getting a paycheck, that's practically everyone, because as Tom well knows, but the rest of the listeners may not realize, is that every piece of information that you get about what you made as far as a W-2 or a 1099, the IRS and the state tax agency, if you live in a state with an income tax, is going to get that information also. And they're going to come chase you for the money. And so if you're withholding, as illegal as it may be, is too low and it doesn't cover whatever the IRS or the state tax agency calculates you should owe, then they're going to come after you. They're going to start sending you notices and you know, want the money. So what you need to do, if you can't stop the withholding and you're not getting any cooperation, then the withholding better at least be high enough to accommodate the IRS or the state tax agency making that calculation and coming up with you basically having a refund. If you've paid in more than what they're expecting, then they'll probably leave you alone. If you've paid less than what the IRS or the state agency is expecting, then they're going to start sending you notices for the difference. And, of course, if you don't cooperate even then, eventually they're going to resort to levies or liens, depending on, you know, how big the tax is that they claim that you owe. So, Tom, I hope that was of some help. I just, you know, I'll certainly keep all of us in our prayers having to deal with this. I think basically, in a nutshell, we are at very early stages of waking up our fellow Americans, and it's tough. You know, it's kind of like the early days maybe of the American Revolution or the early days of the anti-slavery movement, or anything where people are fighting for justice. We're in a tough position, kind of the pioneers trying to wake people up about what's right. And it's a tough daily battle. And if it's any consolation, you know, we're fighting it also. The best thing I can suggest to you is to, you know, this is something you can do privately, of course.
And of course, I just want to mention that nothing Joe says is advice.
Right. It's just one human being to another, one American to another, trying to struggle to protect our rights and be free, you know, utilize the gifts that God gave to us. But basically, Tom, you know, interact and network with people like myself, listen to my show, Jane's show, support Liberty Works Radio Network, really network with the people who do know what's going on, and you might find that eventually there's work out there among people that understand us and that realize there's a big problem in mainstream society and they want to make a change. And so I'd say networking with people, like-minded people, is really your best bet, and to spend as much time as you can doing that, and you'll find that there are opportunities. They may not be as lucrative as in the, you know, so-called mainstream, but they'll certainly be more lucrative in terms of your integrity and your, you know, if you've got the staying power to want to stick with your rights and the truth. Networking with like-minded people will add a lot of strength.
I would second that. Joe, we do have another caller, and I think we possibly want to be moving on. I do have a few sort of housekeeping things. If you are listening, if anybody's out there listening on the Internet, please encourage any friends that you have clued into the program to listen on the Internet. If you have problems listening on the Internet and the sound is not coming up, please be aware that we do not have ability to listen by phone. We would love that ability, and you can help us to have that ability and make future programs much, much better by going to www.lwrn.net, click on the Donate or Join buttons, and please donate to us or join, or you can call the offices at 410-857-5444 and ask for an information packet and join us. And we'll have a lot more shows where we can directly attack your questions if we have the funding for it. So thank you very much. Tom, is it okay to let you go now and let other people take your place?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I really appreciate that, Joe and Jane. Thank you so much. Our prayers are with each other, so.
Okay.
Thank you, Tom. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And I just want to remind everybody, we do have Jane Doe with us. She has her own radio show on Liberty Works Radio Network, and I'm thrilled to have Jane with us, and I know you are too.
Well, Joe, since we got a little bit of late start, I think we're just going to go right to the next call. Caller, you are on. Please ask your question. Are you there, caller? Well, maybe not, Joe. Fill in, and we'll see if we have another caller.
Okay. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, the call-in number is 410-848-9191. That's 410-848-9191. You know, there are, for those that are savvy with their Androids and iPhones, there are apps that are located at the LWRN.net website, and I actually downloaded one, or had one of my sons help me download one a few weeks ago. So that works really good. You know, I've actually just pressed on the app, and you're immediately connected to Liberty Works. So I know a lot of people have smartphones nowadays and iPhones, and that's a great way to listen.
Okay, Joe, we have Larry.
Larry, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you? Is this Joe?
This is Joe, how are you?
Hi, Joe, doing well. Been keeping up with you, actually. actually for years, and you've been out of the spotlight for a while. So glad to see, or maybe I'm just not knowing where the right place to go, but glad to hear that you're still around, and I'm so sorry to hear about Tommy.
Yes, yes, we are all very, very saddened by Tommy's definitely left some an incredible legacy that we all are trying to measure up to. So what can we do for you today, Larry?
Yeah, man with a lot of courage. Anyhow, I had just got a question, and I'm not sure exactly what to do about it, but I had received a notice in from an automated system out of Cincinnati, I think it was, and, you know, asking for my name, blah, 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 and, you know, for past filings that were not filed.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought I'd pick your brain and see what you thought.
Sure. Well, that's probably like a CP-515 or CP-518.
It was.
There, generally, it'll say, where's your return, or, you know, just a little friendly letter asking you for your return.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, that's sent to people who were filing in the past, and the IRS has, you know, in their databases a record of that filing of the tax return for, you know, a few years or many years. And then all of a sudden, those returns aren't coming in like clockwork every year. And so they have these, and of course, this is something you can, you know, check out on a search engine, CP, which I believe stands for Computer Paragraph. And as Larry's describing, the IRS sends out millions and millions and millions of these CP letters. The computer is just working 24/7, churning out these letters. Basically, the reason that you would get such a letter, other than, like I say, a track record of having filed and then returns are no longer coming into the IRS, is that there's some kind of an what's called an information return that has come to the IRS about you. And this is actually something I mentioned when Tom, you know, previous caller, Tom, was on the line, that when you get some kind of information indicating, you know, how much such and such a company paid you in contract money, or if you're an employee at a business and there's a W-2 involved, every time you get a piece of information, know that that same information has gone to the IRS as well. And so the IRS computers are trying to match up the information that someone else told them about you with what the IRS is expecting you to tell about yourself on a tax return.
Mm-hmm.
So, Larry, in your situation, there probably was some kind of work that you had done, one or more
mm-hmm.
sources, and so the IRS has received these 1099s or W-2s, one or more, and then their computers, you know, do a little hiccup and say, okay, well, we've got this information that Larry made X amount, but we haven't seen a tax return from Larry, so we're going to send him a little inquiry that basically says, perhaps you forgot, perhaps there's some kind of difficulty, but remember, we would like to have a tax return so that we can match up what other people are saying about you with what you're going to tell us about you.
Right. Okay, well, that sounds exactly what was going on, and the next question is, what to do about it?
Well, that's it puts you in a difficult situation because, basically I think what I'll do is I'll tell you what the IRS will continue to do. How long ago did you get those notices?
3 weeks ago.
Okay, so it's relatively early in the process. Generally, what Larry's describing is this, you know, question on a notice, where's your return, is the nearly the first stage. That's the first salvo, shall we say.
Is that a CP-515?
Pardon me?
It is a CP-515?
Yes.
Yeah.
CP-515.
Computer paragraph 515, that's the very first request, right?
Right. Now, a CP-518 will generally follow that. Did you just get one notice, Larry? Or
yes, yes, one.
Okay.
You know, Joe, there used to be four of these.
Well,
516, 517, 518, and they kind of started skipping the two in the middle.
That's right, which is indicative of how the IRS does business. Their procedures do actually call for, I believe, four different notices of that genre, and they skip, and they just send out a 515 and a 518, in my experience, and then, So what's going on is they're first going to ask you, and they're going to say, you know, perhaps you forgot, perhaps there was some kind of mix-up. If you have already filed, send us a copy of what you filed, and if you haven't filed, please file.
Right.
If you do not file, the IRS will go forward and basically prepare a tax return for you, and that gets into a lot of issues in terms of, you know, I and many of my colleagues, and Jane, I'm sure, will agree, the IRS commits one of the many aspects of their fraud in the manner in which they prepare this tax return. The IRS has the authority, in some limited cases, to prepare a tax return legally for someone who doesn't. But for someone who's not required to file a tax return, the IRS goes ahead and files one anyway. And I'm sure anybody with any sense of justice and the way the law works, why should the IRS file a tax return for someone that wasn't required to file in the first place?
Sure, sure.
However, in the difficult straits that we find ourselves, the IRS treats the average person, me or Larry or Jane, they treat us as if we do have a filing requirement, and that's how they operate, that's how they move forward. So what they will do is, putting aside that it's lots of fraudulent aspects of it, they will go ahead and prepare a return based on the information that they have. And at this stage, with the CP 515, the earliest IRS notice for someone who hasn't filed, I don't think they give any detail on that, but I can guarantee you that they know something. They know some amount of money that you've made. And eventually, probably after the CP 518, which would be a next semi-friendly notice, they're going to issue what's called a 30-day letter. And that will basically come forward and tell you what it is they know about you and tell you this is what our information is, and they'll want you to respond. The problem with not filing a tax return and not giving them the information yourself is that the IRS is going to only operate on the information that it has.
Sure.
And so the problem that everyone runs into in most cases is they've got these little incentives to get people to file. One of them is called deductions. if you don't show them or provide them with any deductions, the IRS isn't going to give you any when they go ahead and file their version.
Sure.
And so that's
right.
Going to mean a much higher tax that they're going to calculate.
Sure.
This is basically the catch-22 that they put you in, is if you don't file and you stay in a non-filing position, they're going to move forward with generally a higher number because they don't give you any deductions. And that, of
right.
course, means that after they make the calculation and come to this amount that they claim you owe, they're going to ask you for the money, and if you don't pay it, then they're going to try to come out and find it. And so if you have, assets in the form of personal, like a residence or a real property or bank accounts, eventually it will progress to the point where they're going to come hunting for it.
And if you don't have property and you don't have anybody paying you and they don't know where to find the money, then they're just going to have trouble.
Yeah, they're going to have trouble. And there is something called a collection statute of limitations. Which is 10 years. But basically after 10 years, if they've not been able to collect the money, at least if they're semi-following the law, which of course is a difficult enough challenge to get them to do, but they cannot collect a debt that's more than 10 years old.
And that's 10 years after they actually assess it, not 10 years after they start sending you notices.
Sure.
But 10 years after the actual assessment.
That's good.
And something to keep in mind, that this used to be 6 years, you know, and then Congress extended it. And with the current economy, I wonder if they won't go back at some point and say, well, it's just going to be for life or
right.
15 years or 20 years or whatever it is, you know,
right.
Because we're living in an increasing police state. So just to say, you know, it used to be 6 and now it's 10. And you will find the IRS will come in 2 months before they can be done collecting, and then they'll just file a, you know, if they think you have a house or some property that they want, they will go ahead and file a civil suit to get that and to turn the assessment into a judgment so that it's permanent. And you'll find them doing that a month before their time is up, and then, of course, they've extended a tremendous amount more.
Yeah, it's really a dirty playing field, Larry. And I would say that you're early in the process, which is good, but I would say just generally to everyone, if you discover this information, and you'll find that Tom Cryer at truthattack.org has something called a pre-induction physical. And Tom, you know, spent time in the military, and so he tended to use military terms. But he calls it a pre-induction physical at truthattack.org. And the reason he does that is he basically wants to give people a good idea of the landscape, what we're dealing with when we have this agency that's unaccountable, out of control, and, you know, violates people's rights and steals their property daily. What to do about that? What can we do? And so, Larry, you might, at least if you haven't already, check that out as a kind of a weather vane to see what we're all facing, actually, when we have this agency that just doesn't obey the law. But you are still early in the process, and you may want to do you work as a W-2 type person, or is it a 1099 contract type situation?
1099 contractor.
Okay.
Which means I've got a ton of deductions because I drive to and fro constantly, you know.
Right. And that puts you at the biggest disadvantage, is that you have the deductions that have they been there, or will they, if they were to be there in the calculation, they would significantly reduce it or perhaps bring it down to zero, whereas the IRS is just going to move forward with the 1099 amount, the gross.
Sure.
And leave it at that. And
if you want to play on that playing field and you just happen to want to make it a little difficult for them, you know, if they got to the point of issuing a notice of deficiency and you could prove all kinds of deductions, you could always decide to go to tax court and show that your deductions were greater than what they've said, in which case whatever the tax court decides is your liability is going to be your liability, because you always go into the tax court. As a petitioner, and so they presume that you do owe the tax, in fact.
And meaning the burden of proof is on me.
Right. But I'm just saying, if you can imagine a situation where you actually had so many expenses that at the end of the day you would not have even been required to file, which does happen to people.
Sure.
You know, even according to their understanding of it. You know, then, you know, you might want to put them through the hoops. But it does cost a little money to file in tax court, and it's a lot of pain and trouble for the taxpayer as well. So, just
yeah,
a thought.
And, of course, the next option, of course, is to play the game and go ahead and file and spit the return over to them and see what they say. And move from there, or just tell them, look, I'm not required to file, but
right.
Then we go through the other portion of the burden of proof, and
right.
So it may or may not come to the point to where you get charged with willful failure to file, which, from what I understand, you can only be convicted if you believe that you were required.
Correct, but Larry, you have just touched on a really important point, and that's the most jurors out there. If you look around you, most jurors are, from the same pool that the people around
sure.
you are, and so they're very ignorant. And that's, of
sure.
course, one of the reasons for this radio network, Liberty Works Radio Network, and I want to take this opportunity to shamelessly put in a plug for us and ask people who are listening to go to our website, www.lwrn.net, click on the Donate or Join, and please join us as soon as you can so that we can increase our bandwidth and get our messages out to people and get the truth out to people. Because without informed juries, Larry,
sure.
it's really, really a tough going. In a criminal
hard
case. It's tough going. Yeah, it is. We're going to go to a break. And when we come back, we have another caller. I hope that's okay with you, Larry.
Sure, of course.
All right.
Yeah, well,
and
thanks for your time. Are you on every Saturday, by the way?
We're going to try to be. We're just kind of a new thing where we're doing, you know, this live call-in, but I enjoy doing the best I can to share information with people, and I love having Jane with us, too, so we're going to try to do this as often as we can.
Right, and I commend you for your efforts, Joe. You've throughout the years, you've done well, so
thank you so much, and
thanks for the courage that you give to other people.
Thank you.
We'll be back after the break.
To freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
Dad, where did the clouds come from?
Well, buddy, that's a good question.
Is this worm a boy or a girl? Why are shirts orange?
Actually,
Dad, why don't you have any hair on your head?
How do birds fly?
Why is dirt brown?
Well, why can't I fly?
Why can't I fly?
Are we there yet?
You may not have all the answers, but if they're comfortable coming to you now when the questions are small, they'll come to you with the bigger questions later.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
And now, for the Institute on the Constitution, here's Michael Anthony Perutka with The American View.
You can't subjugate a Christian people. They won't stand for it. A Christian culture will recognize and reject tyranny before tyranny can get a foothold. This is because a biblically literate and devoted people will not allow the usurpations of self-government, family government, and church government that are necessary for tyranny in civil government. A Christian people will, by virtue of their understanding of God's creation, their knowledge of history, their comprehension of the divine origin of law, and their assurance of heavenly citizenship, never suffer earthly leaders who do not speak and act lawfully. Therefore, in order to subjugate and enslave a Christian people, you must first, of course, de-Christianize them. Piece by piece, you must remove Christian beliefs and the memory of those beliefs from the minds of the people. This will take some time. You must concentrate on the children. You must take them away from the parents and every day by day, indoctrinate them to reject and forget the Christian ideas and habits of their parents and grandparents. This is precisely what public schools were designed to do. Once the people are de-Christianized, you can take away their rights. You can take away their property. You can take away their weapons. You can tell them lies that they will believe. You can kill them or let them live if it suits you. You can't conquer a Christian people, but if you could steal their children and train them to believe that there is a wall of separation between God and government, then you can enslave them, or rather, they will have enslaved themselves. This is Michael Anthony Perutka for Institute on the Constitution, bringing you The American View.
This is Rob McQuay for the Institute on the Constitution, and you've just finished hearing Michael Anthony Perutka's commentary on The American View. The views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this radio station, and we welcome any comments and suggestions you may care to offer by emailing us at michael@theamericanview.com. If you'd like to learn more about the Institute on the Constitution's work, you can find out more about who we are and what we do at TheAmericanView.com.
In a bold move today, President Obama announced he will try to negotiate with the raging wildfire, which has so far burned over 14,000 acres. The president is confident he can convince the flames to stop incinerating everything in their path.
The president plans to make the wildfire understand that our difficulties are shared difficulties, that it's not man against fire, but man and fire working out their differences.
This fire has burned over 300 homes so far. It's growing larger by the hour. What is Obama's strategy?
Well, look, you know, previous administrations have immediately resorted to putting wildfires out, but this is a different president. He just didn't think that a combative approach with hoses and axes would be the best way to solve this crisis.
But Jason, so far, the fire has refused to acknowledge any of the overtures the president has made.
Yes.
Obama sent a letter requesting it cease its destruction, and the fire apparently incinerated it without even reading it.
That's true. But, I mean, look, politically, this is a stroke of genius, I think. I mean, the most powerful man in the world is offering an olive branch to this petulant fire,
yes.
And the fire looks pretty bad here, childish. I mean, you know, as Obama has said himself numerous times, if he wanted to, he could talk to the clouds and get them to unleash a great rainstorm upon the wildfire. Yeah. But that's not this president.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
Determination,
pass it on. Brooke Ellison is a surprising person.
When I was 11 years old, I was hit by a car, and no one expected me to live.
She surprised people by living.
I have been paralyzed from the neck down and on a ventilator since that time.
And she surprised them by going to college.
Tomorrow, I will graduate from Harvard.
Determination. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. I am the Agent for Truth, Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. Co-hosting the show with...
Is Liberty Works Radio.
Jane Doe, and we're and the commercial staff as well. We're enjoying ourselves here. We're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants, doing a live call-in show, and we've had some great callers already. Tom, who was a controller, accounting manager, Larry, who received a CP 515, which is a notice, basically the first salvo coming out of the IRS when they don't get a tax return from you, that when they've gotten a tax return for one or more years prior to that. And I understand that we have Kevin on the line, but first I'd like to just remind the listeners, you know, if you like what you're hearing, you'd like this kind of a call-in show to continue, please consider supporting Liberty Works Radio Network. We're not trying to make this a telethon, but you know what I get paid to do this show? A big fat goose egg. I actually pay money to bring a message to you. And Liberty Works Radio Network, including Jane, a lot of people work very hard for very little, and we're just trying to get the message out there to people and wake people up. So it really would help, you know, if all you can afford is a buck, then send a buck. But there's places you can donate either by mail or electronic means at lwrn.net, and I hope that you'll kick in little funds. It would really help us a lot. So we have Kevin on the line.
Yes, sir.
Kevin, welcome to the show. And what's your question?
Well, let me give you a little background. Joe, I actually marched with you down in the IRS building back in 2001. Later, yes, sir.
Welcome.
Thank you. Later that year, I had got out of the hospital, working in the hospital, and went back on into construction. And I had a federal tax ID number from a company that I had in New Jersey years ago. So I called in IRS, and at that point I hadn't filed since 1998. So it had been 3 years that I didn't file. You know, I learned a lot of stuff and things like that. Anyway, I tape recorded a conversation in Virginia. Only one person needs to know it's being recorded. So I called in the IRS trying to get that tax ID number, and the lady gave me the number. And after that, she said, well, Mr. Rooney, I see you haven't filed your 99-2000-2001 tax forms. How can we help you do that? And, you know, I started asking her liability questions. I said the definition of income is never defined in the code book. Supreme Court says it's capital gain, blah, blah, blah. And she said, well, let's just file the forms. We'll deal with the questions later. And I'm like, yeah, hello. Anyway, at the end, she got very angry, pissed off at me, threatened me, and said, well, if you don't file, we will file for you. And I said, well, you can't. There's a section in the code book that says the only person who can file for me is the U.S. Attorney General, and there's five tax forms listed in that section, and 1040 wasn't one of them, and that's when she hung up on me. Now, to my question, which is, they did file for me. They did SFR, Substitute for Return?
Correct.
I've never actually seen that. And then recently I just discovered that there's a $65,000 tax lien on my credit. Now, earlier you had mentioned something about a 10-year statute of limitations. So it's been...
Still there, Kevin? Appears we lost Kevin. Hopefully...
Hopefully,
I'm here.
No, there you are. You went away for a minute.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
Say what you were saying again.
$65,000 tax lien, and that's where we dropped off.
Okay, that's on my credit, okay? On my credit report. Anyway, I've never actually seen this substitute for return. I'm assuming I can do a FOIA request to get that. But anyway, what's the best way to go about that? Because my understanding was I can actually go in, if I can find out which IRS agent actually did that substitute for return, I can potentially go after them in a civil suit for fraud.
Well, you could. I try to make people understand the litigation arena is horrendously difficult. Now, if you're one of those...
Joe, cut to the chase. Corrupt is the word you're looking for. Thank you.
Yes, Jane. Well, if you're one of those rare people who actually would know how to litigate a dispute like this in federal court, I have a friend who's not an attorney, but he runs circles around attorneys, okay? And it took him, the IRS owed him about $1 million because they had assessed him wrongly in many different directions. And it took him 12 years to settle with them for $150,000 when they owed him $1 million. Just to give you an idea, I mean, it's a very ugly landscape, and it's not worth most people's time. And that,
we're back to that pre-induction physical thing.
Yeah. Like if you have the knowledge, it's still a nightmare. But remember, you could try to go to the pre-induction physical section of the truthattack.org website. But as far as the lien goes, Kevin, if it has been over 10 years, you're probably your better bet than fighting over the fraudulent SFR that they prepared all those years ago would be to see about just following the procedures that allow you to have the tax lien removed. And, of course, the reason for that, if you look up, like, do a start page search for tax lien removal, there are provisions. I think there are even IRS booklets that will walk you through the steps. And, of course, your reason that you would list is, you know, the assessment was made on, you know, such and such a date back in 2000 or 2001 or whenever it was, and it is now, you know, July of 2012, and the 10-year period has passed. The collection statute has kicked in. You know, it has expired, and I'd like this lien removed.
Okay, great.
Let me ask you a question. Do you know how many years it has been?
It's just over. It was sometime in 2001. I'm almost 100% sure. So if that's the case, you know, the 10 years has expired.
Just remember, it's not from the date that they made the SFR. It's from the date that they actually assessed. And sometimes they can make an SFR and not and see. It would, if they actually made a return and signed it, if the IRS made a return and signed it as required by law, then it would be assessed pretty much immediately. Of course, as you know and I know, they're not doing that. They're not signing these returns. They're not making them according to the law. And so they've got their own, you know, they've come up with their own procedure. And so what they really do is they make an SFR, and then they sort of try to cobble together and go over to make a notice of deficiency. And so they issue the notice of deficiency after that, give you the 90 days to go to tax court. If you don't go to tax court, then they assess it. So the distance between the making the SFR and the actual assessment could be a couple of years. Just so,
but would that be the when the actual lien was filed in the court?
The lien is going to expire again. And let me explain something. Have you ever seen the lien as it was filed in court?
No. All I know is it was done in Culpeper County, and
well,
you know, I haven't lived there in eons. That's about
okay. Do you have anybody who's in Culpeper County?
Right.
Or can you call the clerk of court and have them pull up the information and get a copy of what was actually filed. On a filed notice of tax lien that the IRS files, there's a little box, and this is something for everybody to know. There's a little box in the on the left side of it, all right, on the face, and it clearly states that the lien itself releases a month past the date, I don't have the exact wording, of the last date to refile. And the last date to refile is found on the face of the lien as well. So the liens that the IRS files are self-releasing. That is to say, they're of no effect past a certain date. Now, if you can draw that to the clerk's attention, if you look at it and you see that there's been no refiling and that the last date to refile is on there, you can draw that language to the clerk's attention and tell that clerk that, you know, it shouldn't be listing anymore as a lien in their records. Right. And you can also take a copy of that and send it off to, you know, all the credit unions and say, hello, you should not be listing this. That's wrong information. But you may find that it hasn't expired yet as well.
And as far as filing the actual expiration date, I think this would be instructive to all the listeners. If you you may be kind of letting them know where you're at, so you might want to be careful about what address you use, but you can file a Freedom of Information Act request with the taxpayer advocate or, you know, any big IRS office that's near you, and ask for your IMF, that's an acronym for Individual Master File, transcripts, and on the transcripts look for an acronym that is, it's four letters, CSED, and that stands for Collection Statute Expiration Date. And that will be the date that the 10 years expires.
And if anybody doesn't know how to do a Freedom of Information request or a Privacy Act request, there's a lot of things you can ask for from the IRS. Save a Patriot Fellowship is able to do that for you. And you can join Save a Patriot Fellowship for just $99 a year. And anybody who joins Save a Patriot also is supporting Liberty Works Radio Network. And they can do those sorts of requests for you if you don't, you know, have the time or energy or don't know how to make them exactly right.
Joe,
so you know.
Yes,
Joe, one more thing. Are you familiar with the Republic for the United States.org?
No.
You should really check into that organization. And I'll just leave it at that. I've been involved with them for about 17 months. I had a conversation with Bob Schultz back probably about 9 months ago, because I know his latest push is We the Congress. And I asked him, I said, you know, all you went through with the hunger strikes and this and that, you know, this new thing that you're doing with the Congress, do you really think you're able to fix a corrupt system? And the problem lies there, again, is you're trying to fix something that's become so corrupt. So we're at the point where the Constitution actually says when the government becomes tyrannical, it's our duty to replace it. And that's what this organization has done. So I want to, you know, maybe if you can get that out to the website, check it out first for yourself and look at what's happening. And maybe you know, guys might work together on getting some things accomplished. Thanks for your time. It was great meeting you back then, and good to see you're still in the fight. And thanks so much for answering my questions.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You too. Goodbye.
Well, Jane, do we have more callers?
Joe, we have a caller, Randy.
Okay. Hey, Randy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Joe. Good to hear your voice. Got a rather specific question, which is, do you know which IRS office specifically handles the accepted for value vouchers?
I don't. Well, I'm sure you can send it to any office, but I wouldn't recommend that accepted for value stuff at all. I don't get into whether it's true or not, or there's some factual aspects of it. It just creates multiple nightmares for people, whether it be civilly, as far as the civil functions of the IRS, because it doesn't do anything to, you know, put a wrench in the works. It doesn't seem to slow the IRS down at all. And then criminally, my experience is that those kinds of accepted for value issues lead to things like, you know, filing liens against agents and creating these purported negotiable instruments and trying to pay your taxes with them, or there's all kinds of different aspects out there. But all I see is a pathway of destruction for people that, that go down that road. They don't solve their tax problems. They just make them worse because, number one, they're relying on these accepted-for-value techniques, and it doesn't do any good. So I'd really just recommend against utilizing that kind of stuff, and I would stay away from people that, I mean, you know, go if you want. I'm not saying to censor them or don't listen to what they have to say, but take it with a grain of salt, because I've just never, if I knew of silver bullets, my friends out there, I'd be giving them away for free. But I'm telling you, this accepted for value stuff does nothing but just make people worse off and get them in a world of hurt.
A lot of people get indicted for doing things like that, for failure to file and for tax fraud. If I might just add something that Tom Cryer always said, and he said one time he was in a group where there were government lawyers, and he casually mentioned that, you know, it seemed to him that the only people who really benefited from this type of promotion and talk about the IRS, you know, accepted for value, all the what I would call guru kind of arguments that stray away from the actual law and the applied law. He said, it seems like it only benefits the government. You know, it seems like the government must be paying for these people. And he said he saw the most telling look between these two lawyers. They said nothing. These two government lawyers just gave each other a look. So, you know, it always makes me wonder if they aren't making their own enemies.
Yeah, and I think they're just sitting ducks, you know, the people that follow that. And I would also encourage you to look, Randy, if you haven't already, at Larry Becraft's website, because Larry goes into, you know, the actual results of people that follow that. And again, I don't think it's really beneficial to get into arguments about whether there's some, you know, factual proof for it or whatever. I like to stick with the practical reality, and I know Jane does too. And the practical reality is it doesn't help you at all, and it just makes a bigger nightmare of a, you know, a difficult situation you might already be facing. So it's fake, worthless in my opinion.
Okay. Appreciate your opinion.
Okay, Randy.
Right, well, we do have another caller. Thank you, Randy.
Sure.
And we have another caller. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, this is Robert.
Hi, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, considering. Joe, I have been, first, you're a very brave man. I acknowledge you for that. 2 years ago, I was indicted for various charges, among which was 26 U.S.C. 2701, evasion of payment and evasion of assessment. 10 years, a little over 10 years ago, 2001, I stopped filing because I started following a group you may have heard of at the time, IMF Decoders, where
yeah.
You filed FOIA requests. And I have, you know, two phone book size stacks of correspondence between me and the IRS way back then. And at some point, I forget exactly when it was, probably 4 or 5 years after I started it, they stopped bothering me. And I was working self-employed, and it just seemed to, you know, go away. But because of other charges that I was indicted on, they brought up this tax stuff. So my question is, I saw on your great website about the potential for you to be an expert witness, and in the meantime, if you could direct me to any other individuals that might be helpful in this kind of a case, if that's even possible, you know, because I know it sounds like jurors are very, you know, ignorant of the law, and, you know, that's a tough hurdle.
Right. So you've been indicted, and you're basically awaiting trial?
Yes, it's been delayed multiple times. The process, as you may well know, for the government indicting people for various conspiracy and wire fraud charges and tax charges is basically to I had a public defender from the federal government, and I found out a year and a half, I woke up a year and a half after dealing with him, his motive was mostly, if not always, to get me to plead. So I fired him, got two new attorneys who seemed very, very interested in, taking this to trial for me. The tax, they were thinking about, and the government's going to fight it now because I'm not going to plead. That was one part of their plea deal, is that if I pleaded on the other charges, they'd let the tax charges go away. But when I refused, they're not going to let us severance the tax charges from the other charges.
Well, and so you're pretty happy, at least so far, with the new attorneys that you have?
It's, yes. They're much, much better. I can tell that they're at least working on it and, without, wasting a lot of everybody's time here. You know, they're doing some actual investigation and reading of stuff, and they will listen, and they're working with me very well.
I see.
I just wanted to interject here, Joe, for one second. We do have another caller waiting, but one thing that it strikes me you might want to actually put them in contact with Joe directly for the reading materials that he could probably send them to.
I am going to do that. Yeah.
Right.
They just started a few weeks ago, and they were working on the other charges. And again, they wanted to sever the tax case so that it was too
separate. And I do know that Tom Cryer was able to work with a number of public defenders who were very interested in learning and actually, had open minds about it, and some of them were just amazed at what they learned. So just wanted to interject that. Go ahead, Joe.
Very, very good information. Given that Tom has passed away, Larry Beecraft, what you might also try is that there are some attorneys, at least friendly to the tax movement, if not part of the tax movement, who might be able to consult with your attorneys and give them, your attorneys may be completely, competent in many areas, but generally the tax issue, could very well be that Larry Beecraft, spending a little bit of time with them, could give them a roadmap that they might not otherwise have been aware of. Save a Patriot Fellowship also, as Jane said, for $99 a year, might be a way to get some time with Save a Patriot people who can, help you with the landscape as well.
Okay.
So you might try that. If you type in Beecraft Briefs, and Larry may just try to call in at some point during the show, but he's in Alabama. If you type in Larry Beecraft, B-E-C-R-A-F-T, or Beecraft Briefs, as in legal briefs, B-R-I-E-F-S, you can get his contact information, and I've seen people do that. In other words, they have attorneys that are motivated, but they may not really understand the tax prosecution landscape because it is kind of a specialized field. So you might want to get in touch with Larry and see if either he himself or could make some suggestions of other attorneys who could help your attorneys understand the tax prosecution landscape a little better.
I've also heard, Joe, of an attorney in Texas, Michael Menz.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's top-notch, to my knowledge. I think he's kind of pricey. Not to say he's not worth the price or anything like that, but
he's
got some really high fees. I've heard some people who... But I think he recently had another win. He's top-notch. I mean, if you can somehow get even some consultation or representation, he's very, very good. The Bernhoff firm, the firm that represented me, they moved from Wisconsin to Texas. They're in Austin, Texas. Bernhofflaw.com is their website, and perhaps they'd speak with you or your attorneys for a little while. I don't know. I doubt they charge for a few minutes of time.
Right.
But you could try them as well.
That's great. One more quick question. I don't know if you've ever heard of them or know about them. U.S. Observer, Ed Snook, he claims that publicity is a major factor in a lot of trials, and they do some private investigation. They charge $10,000, which is pretty reasonable. But they say that getting publicity around your case, which is something the government doesn't like. Do you know anything about that? Is that true? Is it just someone selling me a bill of goods?
It's true. Basically, I think, and I went through this myself personally with my own trial, trying to juggle preparing for the trial with publicity and mm-hmm. basically public relations, I guess you could call it. And for me, I found it to be very beneficial to get it. But of course, I was I was amazed at how many people knew about my story and my struggle, and helped me to fund those kinds of things. So I basically was able to go at it with a multifaceted approach. I think you need to be careful, and of course, work closely with your attorneys, as I did, so mm-hmm. that you don't go too far and end up harming your effort by pursuing that public relations in a way that ends up blowing up in your face. So I definitely used it, I think, to my advantage. The government okay. definitely likes to paint you as this person with no friends, no support, and they're able to, it's like taking, like the TSA wants to do, right? Take it in the back room and nobody can see what they're doing. That's the way that the DOJ and the IRS like to operate, too. So certainly the more spotlight that is shown on what they're doing to you, generally the better. But, again, if your attorneys are comfortable with it, again, the Bernhoff Law Firm is expert at the public relations joined in with a tax defense effort. So you might...
The public relations is tricky, though, because... And the reason it's tricky is because most newspapers where people are getting, and most, standard radio programs, not Liberty Works Radio Network, out there, they're still of that general mindset that, you ought to pay your taxes. And so they don't really, they have, it's very difficult to get your story, your version, in my view, the truth, out to the public.
Right,
because
right.
they're so resistant to spreading your story in any way that would be helpful to you.
Right. And perhaps this U.S. Observer, which I believe I've met the publisher and I've, get the paper, and they I've seen them highlight, cases similar to your own, where mm-hmm. they'll actually at least tell the full story, and they will put that out. So to the extent that maybe they have some kind of an arrangement, perhaps for donations mm-hmm. or whatever, that it could be helpful to bring supporters to you, to let people know about your case. And of course, you're going to have to, the hard decision is, of course, marshaling your resources and determining, how much can we spend towards bringing more people to know about my story versus just putting our nose to the grindstone and preparing for this trial. So, those are lots of decisions, but I would certainly, get in touch with U.S. Observer and see if that's the case, where they actually would write an article about your situation, and a lot of people would read that, and it could bring more support your way. But I would certainly do everything in concert with my attorneys.
Yes.
And you might check out the Bernhoff Law Firm website just to see if they might be able to give you some pointers as well.
Joe, I think we're going to be
one more time.
I think we're going to be going to break real soon here. Sorry about that. We do have another caller on the line.
Thank you, Robert.
Okay, thank you.
So, caller right here, but just before the break, welcome to the show.
We don't have a caller before the break. Sorry, Joe.
The break is there.
Tell everybody, Joe, who they're listening to.
This is the Liberty Works Radio Network, LWRN.net.
Liberty Works Radio Network, enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic, helping you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation. Please, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details. Liberty Works Radio, truth in broadcasting.
It seems these days I'm in a haze and I can't concentrate on things, can't eat or sleep, feel incomplete and kinda scared and creepy. I look over my shoulder lots and shudder when I watch TV. I bite my nails and cuticles and watch my words very carefully. I bite my lip a lot and fidget with the buttons on my blouse. Why? Because there's a communist living in the White House. Why aren't people shocked or something? Why aren't people up in arms? Does anyone read history or see red flags or hear alarms? The streets are filled with deaf and dumb as I squeak like a mouse. There's a communist living in the White House. You may say, do I have any evidence to support my suppositions? His grandparents were socialists. His mother was. His father was a communist. He had Marxist professors. He taught a course in college on Saul Alinsky. He told Joe the Plumber on the campaign trail, spread the wealth, which is a direct quote from the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx. He appointed Van Jones to be his green job czar. Van Jones is a purported communist. His church of 20 years, what with Jeremiah Wright preaching, was black liberation theology, which is actually Marxism. Then as soon as he got in office, he had the government take over the banks and the car industry. Now he's trying to jam down our throats socialized medicine and the cabin trade. I mean, how much more proof do you want? Everybody is a communist living in the White House.
Liberty Works Radio Network.
The American Dream was given birth by Samuel Adams, the father of the American Revolution. For 40 years, Sam agitated the American colonists to rebel against the British monarchy. His sacrificial effort cost him the entire fortune he inherited from his father. He was captivated by John Locke's theory that the average man was capable of governing himself, that an aristocracy was counterproductive and oppressive, and that the only lawful function of government was the protection of life and property. All else was an obnoxious intrusion into the affairs of the individual. Those who knew Sam and worked closely with him called him the last of the Puritans. He understood that rights come from God. He declared, "The right to freedom, being the gift of God, it is not in the power of man to alienate this gift and voluntarily become a slave."
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Isn't life an awesome gift? Married couples have the power to co-create an eternal life with God that will last forever. God has also designed us so that we can plan our families effectively, naturally, and without chemicals or barriers. Learn natural family planning in English or Spanish through classes or home study from the Couple to Couple League. Visit ccli.org or call 800-745-8252.
Join the cavalcade to freedom. The cavalcade back to constitutional government. Climb on board and do your part to proclaiming liberty throughout the land. Join and support Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. To view the strategic plan, to spread the word, and to get information on joining, go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com or call the fellowship office at 410-857-5444. That's 410-857-5444. To join the cavalcade to freedom. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. We're having a all-caller two-hour show, and I've had lots of great callers with excellent questions. I am Joe Bannister, the Agent for Truth, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. And let us know if you like the show, you like this kind of a format. As I said, getting paid the big bucks here, and Jane too, you know, a big fat zero. We are happy to give our time to try to spread the truth. But the network itself, running all the equipment and staff, it takes money, as you can imagine. And so if you like what you're hearing, you know, let Liberty Works know, lwrm.net. You can email the network. But, of course, donating a little bit of money, a lot of money, whatever you can afford, every little bit does help so that we can have more call-in lines. You know, part of the problem with getting popular or having something that's popular and people want to participate in is that it may burst at the seams and we don't have enough lines, telephone lines to accommodate everybody, et cetera. So it really you can really help by donating a little bit and helping us along. We have another caller. Heidi, are you with us?
Hi, I am. Thank you so much for presenting this today. I just wanted to ask, I have to give you a little background, though. My husband and I have been going round and round with the IRS for 10, 12 years now, trying four or five different Patriot approaches. Because Paul was working for a major corporation, he paid taxes the whole time, just that we didn't file. And then we filed statements, and those seemed to be keep them quiet. But then when we came back in and filed regular returns trying to make amends, that's when they came after us. And with all guns blazing, they started about 5 years ago with an onslaught of notices of levies and liens and all this, and kept coming, and kept charging us for frivolous fines over and over, and we just couldn't figure out why they were doing it over and over again. And we finally sought help from the tax response team, and we got our IMS report that found out that they had been fraudulently putting things in our IMS, saying that we were using a fraudulent tax social security number and multiple duplicate charges on using DLNs over and over again. And so we have 120 pages each of violations they've committed in our IMS. So we sent a package into Ogden to the Audit and Assessment Reassessment, Audit of Reconsideration Office, and we talked to an agent there, and they said, yeah, this is bad. We need to fix a lot of this. And then we haven't heard a word. So, and they're garnishing my husband's pension check. So now they really hurt us and where it counts. And I was thinking, finally, since I haven't heard from them and there's no sign that they're going to or cooperate or change or fix what's wrong, I actually gave in and I got Paul to agree to send a white flag letter, I call it. So I just sent him a white flag letter and I said, if you'll agree to take all the liens and levies off, all the duplicates, all the fines, everything, make our account zero, we will go to the table with you for the years in question and we'll go over the W-2s and we'll go over what's there on paper and we'll set up a payment plan for what's back tax. So I don't want to fight this battle the rest of my life. So I don't think they'll agree to that. That's my question to you. If they'll do the right thing on their end, we'll honor our end. Otherwise, we'll just take them to court and take our chances because we have a pretty good case considering what they've done in our IMS.
Right. The difficulty is that the IRS, in my experience, especially over the last 5 or 10 years when there's been such an uptick in people, you know, waking up to the truth and then, you know, acting upon it in some manner. Of course, there are so many different organizations out there, and you really have to watch out. I mean, I always tell people to really be careful before you're going to, you know, plunk down money to some organization that says, hey, you know, we can save your bacon and look at all these problems in your IMF. And they're there. There's a definite huge amount of evidence of fraud in the individual master file transcripts. But the question I have is how many people and groups are out there that are competent enough to not only discern, you know, definitively what those fraudulent errors are, but what you can do about it after. And I've found that that's where the difficulty lies, is even if you're able to prove up all the fraud in your transcripts and in the computer systems, getting a venue where someone will actually do something about it, I have yet to see that happen. So I think that if your husband's getting a pension check, that, you know, basically, as you have figured out, makes you a kind of a captive audience. The firm that handles your husband's pension and issues the check, more than likely, you know, they're going to roll over to the IRS and continue to do so. And so really, if that's your main source of support, you know, to put a roof over your head, they basically have you cornered. And, you know, Ms. Jane can point out way out. I think that your white flag letter is probably the most realistic approach. What you might try, if you haven't already, is to the word hardship is a key word with the IRS, especially the Taxpayer Advocate's Office. And it sounds, just in the brief description that you gave, that you're definitely in a hardship situation. So what you might...
Yeah, well, I just say they won't... With the hardship, if you try to file that, they want exact records of all your expenses, and we don't want to provide that, so we can't really use that.
Oh.
Yeah, I want to add on to that.
Okay, Jim.
In a hardship petition, our experience is that the hardship petition, one must understand that the discretion of the IRS. So they can deny it all day long. There's no requirement that they do anything at all. It just reflects Congress's sort of intent to help people out. And so with the hardship petition, and this goes for the Taxpayer Advocate's Office too, there is no way the Secretary of the Treasury, the IRS department, is going to even consider a hardship petition unless the person has filed returns, all returns. The Taxpayer's Advocate's Office will not work with someone unless they've filed all returns. And so that, you know, that's going to include going through expenses and everything. So just that's the hard place that you're in. There is no leeway for a person who isn't fully bow down, bend over and spread them compliant. They don't want to help anybody else. And even
I'm at a place now where I'm almost willing to do that just to stop the onslaught of letters that
okay.
I have to continually spend my life replying to. And I have one last question.
Well, I do have Heidi.
Disability. Can they take a disability check too? Because they're taking most of that also.
Oh, let me speak to that. Is that a Social Security disability?
No, it was from work. Paul retired early because of a disability, and they're supplemented his pension with an insurance policy for disability, and they're taking almost all of that and almost all of his pension.
Joe, can you speak to that? I think that sounds to me like it would definitely, you'd have to look at the law there and the laws around that to see if that's something they can actually take. Often accountants at pension funds, at companies, know nothing about the laws. They simply do whatever the IRS tells them to do. So that would require a lot of research into the law.
Yeah,
okay.
My only comment is that I believe that certain kinds of disability payments, benefits are supposed to be exempt from levy. But again, we kind of talk a lot about the practical reality, and that is that the IRS They're limited to 15% in many different cases. I believe, for one, Social Security benefits are supposed to only take no more than 15%.
Yeah.
But I've routinely seen them take an 85%. They use the complement. They use 85% rather than 15%. They're not accountable at all, and they don't listen to reason or the law. A recent case I've been involved in where a veteran. Clearly, not only the statutes but the court cases indicate that his disability pay should not be levied, and they're levying it anyway. And so the taxpayer advocate is currently saying, well, perhaps we can pursue this through a hardship, which, as Jane said, you absolutely have to have full compliance with every aspect of the evaluation process and giving them information. So it perhaps that might be the situation you're in. You have to at least look at it, that the IRS is going to do what they want, and no matter how much you show them that they shouldn't be levying, chances are they probably aren't going to listen, and that if you want to ever get that pension back, or where they're not taking money from it, you may have to go through a hardship pathway, which means, you know, you're just completely at their mercy as far as what documentation they want. And as Jane said, they're going to want every tax return up to, you know, the current period. They're going to want all estimated payments. But, you know, if you're in very difficult financial circumstances, then the numbers will show that, and that you are definitely in a hardship. And they basically they're not going to get blood out of a turnip. You know, they're not going to get you to pay all these millions of dollars or thousands of dollars because you don't have it.
And Joe, can I just answer there?
Yep.
That's really the key point here. If the IRS looks at you and they see you have assets or something they can take, and this goes for anybody contemplating an installment plan, an offer in compromise, whatever. If the IRS looks at you and they see that you have assets or places they can take this money, they're not going to be compromising with you. They're not going to be agreeing to anything that will give them less money than they can otherwise get.
Right.
Okay. Right. They can't find anything. We don't own anything. We don't have any other assets. So maybe we should just let them go ahead and take the 75% of the pension and leave it at that. I don't, you know, if they won't answer this letter that I wrote them.
They will, yeah.
A letter with them and say, hey, we waited for a response. We're not hearing from you. And maybe I'll threaten taking them to court because we have the evidence in the IMF.
I wanted to say something about what you said earlier about how you had filed statements with them and they left you alone, but then you went back to filing returns.
Yeah.
If you were filing statements, and correct me if I'm wrong, were you filing statements that said that you weren't required to file?
Yeah.
Okay, well, after that, then you went back and you actually filed returns that said you are required to file. Now, if you think about that, that's like talking out of both sides of your mouth. So,
yeah, I know.
So now once you said, I am a taxpayer and I am required to file, but you had all these statements from before that said, I don't think I'm required to file. That's like proving their case that you were just being frivolous.
Right. I know.
That's like
was our guy, and he was excellent, but they finally got him, and he's in jail now for 16 years or something.
And who was that?
Lamar Hardy.
I never heard of him.
Yeah, very excellent guy. Trying to steer people the right way, like everybody else who stands up and takes a stand. So.
Yeah, well, my personal position, I wouldn't advise anybody, but my personal position is if you don't owe a tax, then there's no communication that you need to make to the IRS whatsoever on any level.
And you might take that the white flag letter if it's sent to the taxpayer advocate with a Form 911 of all forms. Form 911 will actually at least get the taxpayer advocate to look at your case, and again, if you use words like hardship, and of course you explain the financial hardship that is causing you, or if you're not getting a response, that's another reason for the taxpayer advocate to get involved. If the routine IRS procedures are not providing you with results and not providing you with relief, then that's another reason the taxpayer advocate can jump in and at least shuttle your case through the system and figure out ways to get you through the mess. So, use words like hardship, explain how this is causing difficulties and that you want to try to explore how to get things fixed. You don't need to be specific about how to fix them. Just show that that's your intention in your letter and use a form 911 and send it to the most large IRS offices have a taxpayer advocate's office. If you just type in taxpayer advocate address, probably into most search engines, you'll find the address of the taxpayer advocate near you.
Okay. Thanks. We tried that route once, and maybe if this doesn't work, we'll go that route again. But thank you so much for all of you for being there and taking a stand and offering this stuff.
Thank you, Heidi. Thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
Joe, we have another caller.
Okay. Welcome to the show.
This is Leon.
Good morning.
Hey, Leon.
Yes, this is Leon in D.C., Ground Zero.
Hi, Leon.
I'm glad that you have this format on. I've been waiting for you to come back for such a long time. I want you to speak to the point or to the fact that most average Americans or most people who have jobs and get paid are not actually getting an income.
Well, perfect. Well, I know Jane could do well there. I'll just say my little 2 cents. The IRS will dismiss this as frivolous, but I mean, let's think about it here. Okay, the Supreme Court has said over and over again that your time is your property. If you devote your time towards something, that's your property. And when you devote your time, you get paid $30 an hour to do some kind of labor or service. You're spending your time doing that. And then you receive $30, for example, in return for that time. That $30 is also property. And the Supreme Court has said over and over again that there has to be a gain or an accession to wealth. I've even seen in the IRS frivolous tax arguments ridiculous paper that they have where they admit in the court case that there has to be a gain. Okay?
Yes, that's right.
So when you just trade your time, which is your property, for some green Federal Reserve notes or gold or some other property, it's property for property. There is no gain. Now, what the IRS does to get around that is that they claim that the basis, the investment, shall we say, of your labor is worth zero.
Okay.
Which is ridiculous, because why would somebody pay you $30 an hour
for zero?
Your basis, if your cost of producing that labor was zero. If you worked for someone else and they were going to bill out your time, they were going to pay you to work for somebody that they had made arrangements with, well, they're going to bill you out at $30 an hour, or they're going to bill you out at $50 an hour. They're going to pay you $30. And they get to deduct $30 an hour that they paid you.
Yes.
So when you're dealing with someone else hiring you to do some work, then all of a sudden your labor is worth something. But when it's you yourself, the IRS says that your labor is worth zero. And that's how they claim that you have a gain on what you make. So, Jane, what would be your comment?
I have a couple of comments. Of course, Joe, you're correct that, your labor is worth something. And not only that, you have a tremendous amount of expenses in keeping your labor going. You have to keep up your health. You have to feed yourself and clothe yourself and provide shelter for yourself and energy. And you have to transport yourself to work. You have to take care of medical bills. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, as everybody knows who's trying to keep alive. So, there's that, and neither the Congress nor the IRS would ever consider taking that into account. If you look at the paltry standard deduction and personal exemption amounts that they give people, I guess they think all that's going to be eaten up, and that's all that it costs you to live. At any rate, Joe, the interesting thing to me is, and this, of course, I must say again, not necessarily the opinions of Liberty Works Radio Network, but if one goes to the Internal Revenue Code and one looks at it carefully and sees how it is structured, one realizes that the wages and salaries that are being called, quote-unquote, income in the Internal Revenue Code are only those wages and salaries of people who are foreigners, who are non-resident aliens, of course, whom the withholding agent is taking, withholding a certain amount of the, quote, income they give them, which income is actually called by the Internal Revenue Code wages and salaries. So there's income, and then there's a kind of income that is only for non-resident aliens in the Internal Revenue Code. It's kind of a long explanation, but I find that interesting because the IRS, of course, would never want to make that straight to anyone.
Is it useless to use this information when you're responding back to the Internal Revenue, such as that the gentleman you had earlier with the CP 515? Would it be useless for him to use this argument?
I would say yes, and I say that hesitating, grudgingly is a better word. I've tried I've had clients that have tried. The bottom line, I think Jane kind of touched on this a few minutes ago, that when you're dealing with the IRS, they're going to treat you as a taxpayer. They're going to treat you as somebody that owes the tax. And if you don't believe that you do, communicating with them can actually have a detrimental effect. And I didn't used to think that, but after about 10 or 12 years of seeing how much they ignore those kinds of things, my suggestion to people is that they still do the research and they document, like, for example, if you haven't already, Leon, at truthattack.org, there's a law library section. They go through a chapter and verse about these kinds of issues, about what is income and what the Supreme Court has said about income, who's liable for the tax, and those kinds of things. And I basically encourage people to do their research, document the research that they do, keep a diary and be really organized about it. But I wouldn't be sharing that kind of stuff with the IRS because it just seems to fall on deaf ears.
Well, I do have an input for you there, Joe. a lot of times people don't help themselves in responding to the IRS because what they're responding to the IRS with is off point, or it's not in absolute keeping with the law. And they can really hurt themselves with that, because imagine later down the road if somebody comes after them with a failure to file, willful failure to file or something, and they've put a lot of kind of nonsense in to the IRS. Well, the IRS will definitely pull that out and use that against them in court. The jury will look at them and say, you believed what? Okay?
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, what Joe says is true. The IRS is going to ignore it for the most part, whether you write to them or don't write to them. If they believe that you, if they've got 1099s or W-2s that say that you have income or whatever it is, and they believe that you do have income, they will go ahead and they're going to make their little substitute for return, and they're going to file, a notice of deficiency, and they're going to go all the way to assessing the tax. They don't need your input for any of that.
Right.
Okay, but if you want to protest along the way, true enough, as Joe says, they will ignore it. However, there's one aspect you might want to think about. If you can keep it as close to the law as possible,
exactly,
and as reasonable as possible, and you want to just put in a mild letter back saying, I'm really baffled, I can't see where I'm required to file a return. The 1040 form says, on the Privacy Act notice says that, itself says that your legal right to ask me for these questions is 60,001, 6011, 6012. 6012 says that I have to be liable under Title A. I have looked at Title A. I see one liability provision for a withholding agent, and I'd like to inform you that, I'm not a withholding agent. I don't pay any non-resident aliens any income or any wages or salaries. And you just put that in there. Now, they're going to ignore it, and, in fact, in their records, they're going to write down that you put in a frivolous response.
Yes.
Okay, because to the IRS, everything that the law says is frivolous.
Yes.
I think I said that right. Did I say
yes,
that right,
yes,
Joe?
It makes
yes,
sense.
You did.
Anyway, so here's the thing, though. Suppose now you've put something in on the record. They do have to put that in on your record, and you, if you send it certified mail or whatever, then you've got a record that you sent it to them too. And this is part of your documentation of what you believed and at what time you believed it.
Yes.
Okay?
Very good. Yes.
So that you can, you're actually just, in case you should ever be indicted, mind you, you can say, well, I wrote them this, I told them this, I asked them to please set me straight if they have, you know, if they... You know, if they have some other information, and here's what they replied to me. They ignored me, or they sent me the truth behind the income tax, and then I took Tom Cryer's document, the truth behind the income tax, which is right here, and I mailed that back to them, and they didn't respond to it, you know,
yeah.
This kind of
yeah.
thing.
Right.
So the only benefit I can see, really, is if you're very, very careful that if should you ever find yourself in the situation of trying of them trying to indict you, that you would have some record that they have themselves of how you tried to communicate in a very nice and reasonable fashion with them.
Yes, that's the answer I was looking for. One other thing. How beneficial is it to get that master file that they have on each individual corrected?
In my experience, Leon, there's a lot of errors and outright fraudulent entries, but I've tried personally for my own self to get entries corrected. We've shown them the black letter law as to why they're required to get these entries corrected, and it's gone nowhere. Now, of course, I haven't devoted all of my time and energy over and over again to that pursuit, but I certainly encourage people to get a copy of their transcript if it's not going to increase. Like, in other words, if the IRS isn't bothering you, and
yes.
then you send a request for an IMF transcript, and you give them a current address and your current picture of your driver's license to get it, you may end up kind of waving a flag like, hey, I'm over here.
Okay,
but
yeah.
if they're already, bothering you, if you're already getting notices and things,
yes.
you might consider at least getting a copy of your IMF because there is information on there that can be valuable in your fight. But in terms of getting entries corrected, I've spent a lot of time trying to have them obey the law and have gotten no results. So unless Jane has a different experience, I've not found much.
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure. Asking a Freedom of Information request waves a red flag or not. It's lots and lots of people ask for their individual master files, so I'm not so sure it raises a red flag or not. However, I do know that they have a centralized system now for any Privacy Act requests. And so they are scanning it in a centralized spot. So it would not surprise me that they're taking whoever asks and comparing it to their records.
Yeah,
but
okay.
It would not surprise me. However, I'm not so sure how far ahead they get with that, honestly. And I don't know. However, I will say that, the people who know the procedures, if I can put in a little plug here, is Save a Patriot Fellowship. People who join Save the Patriot Fellowship have access to calling up, having people make Privacy Act requests for them, and they can explain what they find in the Privacy Act requests and the IRS procedures to people. They cannot and do not, they're enjoined by a court from writing letters to the IRS, but the court does not enjoin Save a Patriot Fellowship from explaining the procedures of the IRS.
Okay.
Which is very valuable, I think, as you may have noticed. Which Joe and I are trying to do even today.
Yes.
So we do have another caller, so Leon, if we could let
yes,
you
ma'am.
Go, we're going to go to our next caller.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Take care. We have another caller on the line?
Yes.
This is Joe. Welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune Radio Show. What's your name?
Shirley.
What can we do for you?
Okay. About several months ago, I received a letter from IRS because I hadn't filed since back before 2004, and they was requesting to know if that was my address. So I did not fill it out and send it back. So last month and this month, I get a disability annuity check from where I work at the post office where I retired on disability, and I get Social Security. So last month and this month, they took 15% out of my disability check, and then this month they took 15% out of my Social Security check. Well, I panicked, and I called the tax advocate, and the first lady I talked to, she said, well, we can't do anything. You need to call IRS, and then if they don't help you, you know, make a settlement or something, then you call us back. So I panicked, and I called IRS, and so I gave him all my current information, where I live and this and that. So he says, well, you'll have to fill out these returns. I'm sending these returns to you. You'll have to fill them out, and then we can see how we can have you set up a payment plan or so forth. So then I turned around, and I called the advocate office back, and I got a different person, and they told me kind of different from what the first lady had told me. So they told me that, well, the third person I got, he took all my information, and he was saying that if I showed hardship, that I could probably get the money back that they had already taken out, and I could probably maybe not owe anything. I'll ever have to pay anything because that is my sole income. I have no assets. I rent, you know, and that, what they're taking out of my income is draining me.
Yes.
So then I called LRWN. That's how I got in touch, how I got this information about you. Okay, and I talked to Steve there, and so he was saying he didn't know how he could help me. So then he sent me to a guy that had worked the IRS for a number of years. So I want to know which is my best route. This guy says he can make an offer, but he wants to charge me $2,000. I can pay him out, and then I would have 5 years. I forgot what he said. How long to pay this back? 5 months or something. He said it would take 6 months before they accepted the offer, and then after that, I would have to continue to file. So I want to know which is my best route, to go with the hardship or to use this guy.
I think the hardship, well, certainly the hardship would be a less expensive route. And I believe that in the offer and compromise, you can actually, that can be one of your reasons for why you're looking for an offer.
Mm-hmm.
But what you might try to do is, as far as the taxpayer advocate, which you said, I guess you've called them at least twice or two different times, you could, I don't know if you heard earlier in the show, we talked about a Form 911.
Okay. Well, they had assigned me to an advocate. And
okay, so you already have a phone number for an advocate.
Yes, I have a phone number for the lady that's handling my case.
Okay. Well, then that's perfect. What I would suggest is, if you tell them, you know, look, I'm, the bottom line is in here, I'm already receiving a 15% levy, you know, on my benefits, and the biggest hardship for me is I don't have the money to pay someone to figure this out. Can you show me, you know, how I would go ahead and prepare an offer and compromise and use the hardship reason on that offer and compromise and have the taxpayer advocate shuttle it through, you know, chaperone it through the system.
Okay.
And again, I would think that the saying hardship and that, look, you know, I'm on disability, I'm already, you know, 30% of what I bring in is already being taken, I don't have any assets, and I don't have the money to pay someone to do this for me, you know, some professional, certainly the taxpayer advocate should be able to help you fill out the forms and or at least show you what forms to fill out.
Okay.
And as soon as you report to the IRS that you have, you know, your asset picture is virtually zero, you know, you just live on what you bring in every month,
right.
They should be able to process that paperwork and your offer in compromise would erase whatever happened in the past as far as the taxes, and basically clean your slate for you so that you could move on and not have this levy situation anymore. Jane, any comments?
Well, Joe, I probably missed how many. Did Shirley? Did you say that you had not filed for how many years?
I hadn't filed. Let's see, the papers, the forms they sent me to fill out. That's another question. Do I need to fill those out? But the forms they sent me to fill out for what I hadn't filed for was 2004 up until now. But they
and let
filed.
Me ask you a different question. For those years, were you earning Social Security every one of those years?
I wasn't earning.
I mean, getting benefits every one of those years or not?
Yes.
So were you actually working on the side beside the benefits?
Not. I worked 2007, 8, 9, and 10.
Okay, and you didn't file for those years. And so basically what they're saying is you owe taxes on those years.
Well, they're saying that I owe taxes from 2004 up until now, but they filed 2009 for me themselves. But
I think Joe is correct about the hardship. The problem I have, Joe, is that generally taxpayer advocates become they also often don't want to work with anybody who has not filed, and they will tell them straight up. And so they'll, just as in an offer of compromise, here's the interesting thing. Just as in the offer of compromise, they want you to file all those years, so too with hardship, they often try to make you file all those years. So either which way you want to go, you're gonna end up having to go back and filing if that's how you want to do it. Unless you want to suck it up for the 15% and you want to claim a hardship, I'm thinking that perhaps you could put a little pressure. Perhaps if you have a representative in Congress, okay, that you can go to, your representative in Congress, and you go tell them, look how bad this is for me. Can you please deal with the taxpayer advocate? Can you please deal with the IRS? And can you please make them stop this 15% levy because I can't live? And perhaps if a congressman or a congresswoman was had your back on that and you gave them power of attorney to do it, it's possible. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's possible that they'd have a little more clout and make the IRS stand up to attention and pay more attention.
Actually, Shirley, practically every congressional office has a liaison with the IRS. So
as a what? I didn't get that.
A liaison, like somebody that works with IRS problems for their constituents. So actually, going to your congressman, you should do that in addition to what we talked about of contacting the taxpayer advocate. You don't need to let on to the taxpayer advocate that you're doing that, but go to your congressman or congresswoman, and they usually have somebody on staff that handles IRS problems. And so you get to someone who knows what's going on and knows what needs to be done. And as Jane's right, that would be another avenue that might bring you some help, because they have staff that actually just do those kinds of issues, help people with IRS problems.
Okay. I just want to interrupt here, Joe. We are coming to the top of the hour. I am. We have another caller on the line, and I'm going to ask you. I'm game to stay here and answer people's questions for one more hour. Are you game?
I guess sure.
We just have people on there. I tell you what, we'll continue it at least another half hour, as long as we have callers, maybe an hour. I just wanted to let you know that. So if anybody's listening, we will keep taking callers. And Shirley, I did want to say one other thing, and that is, you know, this gentleman who's asking for $2,000 from you to do an offer in compromise.
Uh-huh.
An offer in compromise is not a difficult thing to pull together for any lawyer or any